This is Dana Monsees, the nutritionist and Whole30 certified coach behind Real Food with Dana, and you're listening to the Real Talk with Dana podcast, where we talk all things nutrition, health, fitness, and mindset with a healthy side of sarcasm. Hey friends, so today we have another totally badass, kick-ass woman on the podcast who just so happens to be one of my good food blogger friends. Her name is Michelle, and she blogs over at The Whole Smiths. You've probably heard of her before if you're anywhere in the paleo or Whole30 realms, because she has a new Whole30 endorsed cookbook coming out called The Whole Smiths. So Michelle herself is a mom of two kids. She's now a cookbook author, and she's a totally awesome, creative, badass in the kitchen. And her mission is to teach you about whole eating and healthy living, keeping everything simple, fun, easy, and totally approachable. Because as we both talk about in the podcast, we both get really turned off when things have really fancy ingredients or tons of ingredients, and when cooking takes a really long time. And that's coming from both of us as food bloggers. But beyond the cookbook and Whole30 and stuff, we are actually digging deep into things that are going to help you in your Whole30 reintroduction, how to not fall on and off the wagon with your Whole30, and really how to navigate a post-Whole30 life through your food freedom, through enjoying treats in moderation, but not having to rely on the Whole30 every other month to get back on track, because that is a really easy trap to fall into, which, as you guys know, is not the best way to go. So without further ado, let's get into the podcast. All right. Well, welcome to the podcast, Michelle. Thanks so much for coming on today.
Thank you for having me.
Yeah, of course. So for people who don't know you or who have been, you know, living under a rock, why don't you tell people a little bit about you?
Okay. I am Michelle, and I am the founder of The Whole Smiths, which is a food blog dedicated to, my tagline is whole eating and happy living. And I think I end up focusing more on the whole eating part, and I should probably incorporate more of the happy living. But my blog's dedicated to making clean eating, healthier foods, just feel more approachable, because I think sometimes eating healthy and clean and all that can get kind of a pretentious feel and feel kind of unattainable for some. So I just try to make it simple and fun and easy and approachable for people.
Yeah. So speaking of all of that, so I know like this whole healthy eating, Whole30 world isn't where you started, right? So talk a little bit about your former life and then how you found your journey like to the Whole30 and what led you there.
Perfect. So I'll even start back. When I was a kid, I feel fortunate that we always were raised with a health minded mentality of how we ate. But as I say, it was like that 80s health. Like, we had Snackwells and non-fat Boston cream pie, cherry cheesecake, whatever, yogurt in the fridge and margarine. So even though we had like that health consciousness, we weren't really hitting it. And then fast forward to my 20s, where I just ate anything, and it's kind of where I fell in love with food. I was living in San Francisco, going to amazing restaurants. I didn't really pay much attention. Like, I mean, I wasn't unhealthy, but I didn't really think about what I was eating much. And then once I had kids, they scare the bejesus out of you when you're pregnant and have a newborn, and you think everything you do is going to kill your child. So I really started paying attention to the food we were eating and being a little bit more conscious about that, and realizing like I needed to have some sort of food philosophy and understanding of what we were eating. I looked at being like vegan. I was like, should we stop eating meat? Like, what do we do? What is gluten-free? I didn't even know what gluten-free was. And then I started researching paleo, and it just landed on me that this seemed to make the most sense. It's what our bodies have evolved to do, and the foods they've evolved to process. And so eventually I'm like, okay, this is what we're going to start eating. This is our framework. And a little after that, I was like, I'm going to start a food blog. I'm going to do this. And I love eating like this. I think this is important. And about 6 months into that, I discovered Whole30 through Instagram because everyone was doing it. And I figured, I guess I have to get on this bandwagon. And that's my long-winded, short version of my eating journey and history.
Yeah. So one question that I get a lot, because I am a Whole30 coach and we both do a lot of stuff with the Whole30, like on Whole30 recipes and posting Whole30 friendly recipes on our blogs all the time. Do you eat Whole30 all the time?
No, I don't. But, and I don't think anybody does. And I think if you think that way, you're going to, you're potentially going to set yourself up for failure, because I think that's really hard to manage forever. But what I do is I've taken what I've learned from Whole30 and I apply it into my food philosophy today.
Yeah. So what does that look like for you? Taking mostly the foods that you've learned from the Whole30 that work really well for you. How does that fit into your everyday life? Especially because you have kids and I'm assuming they don't eat Whole30. But
yeah, maybe they No, not always. So first off, I'd say most of our meals that I make at home are Whole30 compliant. Sometimes I'll add honey to a sweetener, dressing, or, you know, whatever. But most of the foundation of our what we eat is here at home, and the meals are usually compliant. But if I'm breaking it down further to what I've learned through Whole30, like, I don't react well to dairy. So I keep it, I don't cut it out completely, but I keep it to a minimum. So while I'm not having bowls of yogurt and regular dairy lattes in the morning, I might have some goat cheese on my salad, and I'm okay with that. I think it's just, I've learned when I inundate my body with dairy, I don't do well. I don't have any gluten because I don't react well to gluten, and I keep my sugar to a minimum too.
Awesome. So the time that this podcast comes out, a lot of people are going to be reintroducing things or going through the reintroduction process for a May Whole30 if they did one. So if you can think back to like your first Whole30 or your first couple of Whole30s, what was the reintro process like for you? Because I know for me, it was a complete shit show the first time that I did it.
I was just going to say, I'm so glad you're asking, because I totally screwed it up and I didn't do it and I had the worst reactions. After the first one, I was like, oh, great, I did the Whole30. Bring on the pizza. Let's just have a beer. Let's celebrate. And over the course of maybe 6 weeks, I got sick probably 3 or 4 times, like violently sick. I don't know how to explain it other than it felt like I was being poisoned, or it was like your worst hangover for 3 days. And so I was vomiting, I was having diarrhea, and I was getting these rashes on my legs, and I didn't know what was going on. And it was after the last time I was at a concert and I had a beer. It was like I didn't want to wait in line, so I got the larger beer. But it wasn't like I was drunk or anything. I just had this extreme reaction to it, and I realized then it was gluten. And so in the meantime, I'd been going to the doctors. They did an endoscopy, colonoscopy, and they couldn't find anything wrong. And after that last time, I was like, you know what? It's got to be the gluten. And I stopped eating the gluten. And I've been kind of accidentally glutened once or twice since. But other than that, like, I haven't had any of that.
Isn't that crazy how, you know, that you can go to the doctor and do all these endoscopies and all of the lab tests and stuff that they do, and they say, oh, you know, there's nothing wrong with you, like, you're fine to keep just doing what you're doing. And you're like, No, clearly something is wrong. And it's always blown my mind that when I was having all of these stomach issues and stuff in college, that, you know, it was all digestive and GI tract related, and yet no one had ever thought to ask me about what I was eating or how that was affecting me. I'm like, no, I don't understand. And then what even blew my mind more is, like, I mean, that was before the whole concept of like non-celiac gluten sensitivity had even really been in the research that much. And so when I got an endoscopy back in 2009, I think. Mm-hmm. And I didn't have enough villi damage to get diagnosed with celiac. They were like, yeah, you don't have celiac, so you're fine to eat gluten. I'm like, well, clearly not, because every time I eat it, I feel like I'm going to die inside. So
totally. Oh my gosh, Dana, that's it. Honestly, I was pissed. I was super pissed that I was getting this sick and nobody could help me. And I brought up the gluten stuff and the doctor, he totally poo-pooed it. He's like, there's not enough inflammation. He's like, in fact, he's like, you would have to eat it for 6 weeks straight since you haven't been eating it and there's nothing I can do to help you. And I'm like, so I'm going to eat this for 6 weeks straight after seeing what a beer has done to me? Hell no.
Oh my God, no.
Like, that's your diet? That is how you're going to, like, I don't know. I get it, but like, I was just like, you know, I'm fine. I don't need an official diagnosis. If I feel better without it, then that's that.
Right. And I also think taking that into consideration is really helpful and also can be really empowering for people when they do go through this reintroduction process and they realize, you know, maybe it's the beans that don't really work really well for them, or maybe it's potatoes, which are a totally Whole30 friendly food. But whatever it is, you have to take the knowledge of your own body and then use that to inform your decisions going forward, not only when you're cooking things at home, but really standing up for yourself too. Like, if you're going to, let's say you went to a Memorial Day barbecue, or July 4th is coming up or something like that, and there are foods that you know you really don't react well to, but you feel bad turning them down because it's like your grandmother's apple pie or something. You know, it's in some situations, if it's not going to affect you that much, like, you're probably fine eating the apple pie. But if it's something where you have a really severe reaction like yours with the beer, you really have to stand up for yourself, even if it's going to hurt someone else's feelings a little bit, because at the end of the day, you're the person that has to go home with yourself. And if that's going to cause you all sorts of like digestive issues and just make you miserable for 3 days, you've got to stand up for yourself and say, Grandma, I love you, but I really just can't eat your apple pie.
Totally. I am so with you. Like, we have to get rid of the stigma of maybe it's coming from us thinking we're high maintenance or whatever, but, and just let go and put ourselves as a priority. And I also think too, is just like what you hit on is like when people who aren't doing the Whole 30 or aren't eating a certain way hear that you're doing this or trying to clean up your diet, they automatically assume it's kind of goes back to that pretentiousness with eating healthy. Like, oh, well, why don't you want to eat this? Or, you know, where it's like, no, we should just accept. Like, I don't understand why people have such a hard time accepting, like, hey, I don't want your apple pie. Like, this isn't a weird thing I'm doing. It's just not great for me. I don't know why it's so hard for people to accept that you want to eat cleaner. Yeah. Am I making that clear?
Yes, definitely. And I think I've been working through this a lot with a couple of my clients, and I know I've mentioned it on a couple of podcasts, but in the end, it's coming down to a projection of the other people's own insecurities.
Totally.
And, you know, I mean, it is a little, not, I guess, insulting, but it's a little disheartening. Like, if, say, you make a really delicious Whole30 dish or whatever it is, and you bring it to a barbecue or something, and then someone's like, oh, I don't want to eat that because, you know, I'm not eating this, or, and then you're like, wait, well, why? Like, why don't you want to eat what I've made? You know, even if it's something perfectly healthy, if they're like, you know, hopefully, if you're doing a Whole30 and you're the one on the other side of this situation and you don't want to eat the thing, I wouldn't be like, I don't want to eat that because it's not healthy. You know, like, then
exactly,
you're really going to insult that person.
Exactly. Exactly. Like, it's just, there needs to be a more of an acceptance and thinking, like, yeah, I think people think, and it goes back to what you said, it's an insecurity, like, oh, do they think their food's better than mine? And that triggers somebody who isn't maybe making healthy decisions, and it reminds them that they're not. And so then they get defensive, and it kind of is projected in a way that is going to make somebody else who's making better decisions feel bad or put out.
Yeah, definitely. So let's talk about how to navigate the post Whole30, like post reintroduction life, like how to navigate food freedom and enjoying treats in moderation, but at the same time, not having to rely on the Whole30 every other month or even a Whole30 reset every other month in order to get, quote unquote, back on track. Like, what does that look like for you?
Totally. So first off, I think everybody should follow from our mistakes and do the reintroduction. But write down, like, I think what works so well with Whole30 is that people love these guidelines of, like, it's very black or white. And it almost takes the responsibility off of you for making a choice on your own. So what I encourage people to do is make your own rules that you've learned from your experience in Whole30 and apply that to your food freedom. So for example, for me, like I said, I can't eat a lot of dairy. Like, I am well aware of that. And so that's a rule for me. It's like, I don't eat a ton of dairy. I limit it, but I'm okay with some. And if I really want a bowl of ice cream or, you know, a piece of cheesecake, I have to really think, is this worth it? Or Tuesday after lunch, is it worth it? No. So I encourage people to, like, write down what they've learned from the Whole30 and write down their own rules for food freedom and have their own guidelines.
Yeah, I really like that. And one thing, this is actually very timely because when we're recording this podcast, I'll be going on vacation really soon. And so one thing that I like to do is to take those things that I've learned and written down and kind of create like a what I like to call a stoplight list for when you're going out. So there's like the red foods that, you know, if you eat these, like, you are done. It's like disaster pants or something. You're just going to feel horrible, right? So those are always out. And then you have your yellow foods where, you know, like, these don't necessarily make me feel great, but sometimes it is totally worth it. Like, if it's Christmas, it's Thanksgiving, I'm on vacation and I want to try, you know, whatever it is in Iceland or wherever you are. Or like if you're in Italy and you just want to eat some pizza or whatever it is. Yeah. Because, like, if you're going to eat pizza, that is the place to do it.
Totally. Right? Go for it.
Exactly. Right?
Like, enjoy it. And I think you have to let go of the guilt too when you choose to do that.
Exactly. Yeah. And then, of course, you have your green foods, which for most people are going to be whole, real foods that are totally nutrient dense. And that's what you want to base the majority of your food choices on, because they know, you know, that it makes you feel good, not because you're restricting to eat those foods.
Yeah. I love that. I think that's such an easy way to map it out for people. Like, I think that visual aid of, like, the red, yellow, green, it's perfect.
Yeah, just don't do the yellow light means speed up type thing, because it doesn't really apply to food.
Hurry up and eat all you can. Get it all in there.
Oh, my God. Yeah. And then if you, I mean, honestly, the hardest part about this whole stoplight thing is you do have to get to a place where you figure out which foods fit in which categories. Right. Yeah. I mean, and that the hard thing about that is it's going to be trial and error. It's going to be different for everyone. And what works for me and Michelle isn't necessarily going to work for you. So you do have to do the reintroduction process in order to figure out, like, what's going to make you feel good, what's not going to make you feel good, and not based on just an arbitrary list of rules, but based on your personal experience, because no one knows as well as you do how you're going to react to certain foods.
Yeah, no, that's exactly it. And I think something that people need to keep in mind too is that once you're done with your Whole30, this isn't an end. This isn't like, oh, I did the Whole30, I get a badge, I don't know. But it's actually kind of the beginning. Like, you can't unlearn what you learned on your Whole30. There's no going back from that. So I think after your Whole30 is when it almost begins, because the responsibility is on you now. And to take what you've learned and apply it to your life. And I don't want people to think after that 30 days, it's this magical period where everything falls into place. Like, I don't know about you, but, like, for me, it's taken a couple years. Like, it's taken years. And there's still times I'm like, oh, I shouldn't have done this or I shouldn't have done that. But it's a process. And I don't want people to give up on themselves and think that just because they see somebody like me who is like, oh, yeah, I don't eat this or I don't eat that, or feels comfortable in my food freedom, to think that, to feel discouraged by that, because it's taken a long time.
Yeah. And also, don't get discouraged that you realize that it's going to take a long time, because I mean, if you think about however long you've been on this earth, like, you've been learning for all of these years, like, this is the way that you've learned to eat, right? Whether that makes you feel really good or whether it doesn't, that can be a separate thing. But then once you've learned throughout the course of doing this program once or multiple times, as both of us have done, it does take And I will honestly say every time that I have done a Whole30, I learn something different about myself and about my mm-hmm. habits and about the way that I react to certain foods. And mm-hmm. it also goes to say that the first time you do the Whole30 will be totally different from your second, third, fourth, whatever it is. And you might learn that after your first one, like, you felt really good on the program and realized there were a ton of foods that you were sensitive to when you did reintroduction, but maybe your second or third one, you weren't actually sensitive to as many foods because you've done the work to eat more whole, real foods and your gut mm-hmm. has been healing up or whatever it is. So, for example, like, after my first one, there were so many foods that I could not tolerate. It was actually ridiculous. I was like, are you kidding me? I already have celiac and there's so many things that I already can't eat and I'm really sad about. You already took away my bread. Yep. What else are you going to take away? No. You know? And it was like dairy and legumes and even grains I didn't deal well with. And now I can eat all of those things in moderation and be totally fine. Yeah, I mean, if I go balls to the wall with them, I do not feel good. But at the same time, I can still eat those every once in a while now. Like, mm-hmm. those are my yellow foods, mm-hmm. and I'm totally fine. So there is hope at the end of the Whole30 tunnel. It just takes a while to get there.
It totally does. And I think it's safe to say that you'll start feeling the physical effects early, like in those 30 days that you do get more energy. Like, my skin cleared up and you'll start feeling the benefits. But I think what takes longer is, like you said, undoing that psychological attachment that we have to certain foods. That does take, that I think is what takes the longer period of time.
Mm-hmm.
And I think, 'cause we built that up for so long.
Exactly. And what's also really challenging is, I don't know if you've read or listened to Gretchen Rubin, but I feel like mm-hmm. everyone in the Whole30 world now has. So yes. There's the abstainer type and there's the moderator type. And for Whole30, I feel like it works really, really well for people who are abstainers, who do well mm-hmm. with the black and white, yes, no foods rules. This is what you're doing for 30 days. But then it's the reintroduction and the food freedom, which is actually the hardest part, because you don't have that structure anymore. You don't have those rules. So then you have to figure out, okay, I'm not just alternating between being on the Whole30 and then drinking margaritas all day and then going back mm-hmm. to the Whole30 because I feel so bad about drinking all those margaritas and I feel like I've gained 10 pounds from drinking all those margaritas, right? It's the yeah. hardest thing for an abstainer to find that middle ground that, like, life is not black and white. It's a bunch of gray areas, right? The Whole30 mm-hmm. is very black and white. This is yeah. what you eat. This is what you don't eat for 30 days. It's not supposed to be forever. But then yeah. it's finding that middle ground, which I think is the hardest thing.
Yeah. And I have to say, I feel like I'm one of the only people, because I always hear everybody kind of falls into that abstainer category. I think I'm one of the only, like, moderator. Like, that's my jam. I'm like, because now when I do a Whole30, like I did one this January, and I found myself, like, I don't know if it's maybe I've never really been a fan of rules, but, like, I found myself wanting things that I don't usually eat. And I think for me, it was just like, oh, you can't have this now. And I'm like, no, I want this though, but I don't usually want it. So yeah. I think food freedoms come easier for me because I don't usually want a lot of anything. Like, if it's like, oh, I just want a little piece of chocolate at night, or maybe I want a handful of chocolate, I don't know, I won't have it, you know. It's not something I eat all the time, so it's easy for me. But then when you take it away, I'm like, wait, no, I want it.
So yeah, it's like I want it all day, every day.
Yeah, totally. So my husband, he's really good at the, like, black or white. Like, he will, once he commits to something, it's like, it's easy for him.
Well, I think what is really funny is, at first, the program works super, super well for abstainers. But yeah. then I've found, at least for me and a couple of people that I've worked with, the more Whole30s that they do and the more that they learn about themselves, about the foods that works well for them, the mm-hmm. more they become moderators, and you learn that you don't really have to use this program anymore to feel good.
Totally.
And I only realized that because I had the exact same experience when I did the Whole30 back in, I think, September with my gym. And mm-hmm. I mean, it was crazy because it was the kind of thing where, you know, even though we're food bloggers, like, I don't particularly like making treats all the time because yeah. like, eating a lot of sugar does not make me feel great, right? Every once in a
totally.
While.
Totally.
Sure.
And,
great.
And you know what? They're a pain in the ass to make.
I know. Oh my God. Last year I was trying to recreate my grandmother's butter walnut cookie recipe to make it gluten free, and it legitimately took me six tries to make it. God. I wanted to cry and or scream my eyes out by the end of it. My brother loved it because he got to eat like all of the bad ones, which actually still tasted good, but they were just totally flat. But yeah. Oh my God. Yeah. So treats are the worst to make. Props to all of you dessert bloggers out there I don't know how you do it. But it was interesting because I found when I was doing that last Whole 30 that I wanted like chocolate and treats and wine every single day. And those aren't things that I eat on a normal basis. And so I was like, okay, maybe it is a time for me to take a break from doing Whole 30s even once a year, because it makes me, the rules now make me feel so restricted that it makes me want to rebel and go the other way.
Totally. That is exactly the place to get to, oddly. Is that because also too, like you said, like if I wanted that chocolate, I wasn't going to eat all the chocolate. Like I just wanted a little bit. And so it made me want it more. But it's interesting because I think there's an almost this inverse response. Like I think the moderators have a harder time doing the Whole 30, but then maybe food freedom comes a little bit easier for them. Mm-hmm. Whereas abstainers thrive on those 30 days, but then you take that away and it's a little more difficult.
Yeah. And especially because I find that a lot of moderators, because it's so much harder to do the food freedom, that once they're done with the rules, it's kind of, especially like your first and second Whole 30, and like we were saying, we were totally guilty of this too, you fall right off, right?
Oh,
and
yeah.
Then the problem is, it's not just that you want the foods or that your body's getting used to them again, but it's, I mean, sugar is addicting for everyone, whether you're an abstainer, a moderator, whether you're an alien, like it's probably super addicting to you. So the more you eat it, the more you want it. So in a sense, it's like not really your fault. It's your taste buds that are just tricking you that you want all of the sugar. Totally. But then you run into the problem of, okay, now I'm in the like guilt restrict cycle. So after I've kind of binged on all of the things that I wasn't supposed to eat on my Whole 30, now I feel like I need to do another reset like 2 weeks later because I went totally off the walls. And then it's just like yo-yo dieting if you use it that way.
Totally. And it's funny because I think too, like when I go out of town or on vacation, I'm pretty laid back in what I eat. Like if we're going to a restaurant, like I have a couple drinks. Like I don't worry too much when I'm on vacation because I want to enjoy my time and my food. But I will tell you, as soon as I get back, like I am ready to go on like a Whole 30 based diet because that's just not something I want to, you know, it's fine on vacation, but like I don't want to now anymore like have that as a normal part of my life.
Yeah, it's funny. Whenever I get back from vacation, I always crave like vegetables, which happened before in my life.
No, that's totally. I'm like, I just want salads and like, you know, I went to LA with a friend just last weekend or the weekend before that. And it was fine, but I had just a couple drinks. And when I came home, I'm like, is there such thing as a Zupa Noma bone broth cleanse? Because that's all I want right now. It's just Zupa Nomas and bone broth.
Oh my God, I know. Well, that's funny because that's, I mean, not that I did like a bone broth juice cleanse thing, but when I got back from Paleo FX at the end of April, it's funny because all of these like paleo and keto and whatever health bloggers and people in the health field get together to like basically celebrate and learn more about this whole movement on like a clinical side and the food side. But there are so many new products in that space that are like desserty or like Otto's cassava flour was there and they were making these like sugar cassava flour little donut holes and like they were all so good and there was so much like dairy-free ice cream and stuff in Austin and it was amazing because we don't all normally get to eat those kinds of things because DC sucks for that kind of food so I don't have that. But when I got back I was like, oh my God, all I want are like the farmhouse culture gut shots. Like I drank bone broth every day. Like I had a juice every day, like ate all of the veggies and then I felt totally fine afterwards.
Yeah.
You know, just kind of like balance it out. Doesn't have to be an entire Whole 30 for me to fix myself at this point.
No, that's exactly it. And I just don't want to. Like, I don't want to eat like that. So that's why when I do go on vacation or I'm out of town, I don't worry about it too much because I know that's not ever going to be how my baseline of eating anymore.
Yeah. And the really interesting thing is I know because my mom always used to do this. And this definitely fueled my eating patterns that weren't so great when I was younger. But my mom would always go on a diet before we went on vacation.
Yeah.
And then when she would weigh herself before we left, and then we would go on vacation, and she would just go ham on like all of the things that she wouldn't normally eat at home because we're on vacation. And like, that's not that you should overindulge when you're on vacation, but you should definitely experience the culture, try new foods, enjoy yourself, and be stress free, right? But then the problem was, when we got home, she would weigh herself and be like, oh my God, I gained 5 pounds when I was on vacation. So now I have to do like a, you know, whatever, a juice cleanse. Ideal protein bullshit kind of thing in order to lose the weight again. But it's like, whoa. Back up a second. First of all, basic laws of thermodynamics. If you don't eat a lot of food and then you eat a lot of food, of course you're going to gain weight no matter what it is.
Totally. Right?
But then once you take more of a moderator type approach to your entire life, then you don't worry about any kind of weight before or during or after you go on vacation, because you know that when you go home, like, you can still have those treats and indulgences every once in a while if you want as well. So when you go on vacation, it's not so much of the forbidden fruit that I'm not allowed to have when I go home. So then, like, you probably won't even gain any weight at all or feel totally gross when you come home, because it's like, you know, I can have these things when I want, and I'm not going to have them when I don't want them.
It's exactly. Well, and it's funny too, like, kind of like almost comparing the two stories is like when we were saying, you know, we'd go off and we'd eat all these paleo goods, or like for me at Expo, I always come back being like, how is this all natural food? Like, I feel like junk. And so for me, and I think this is going to be the same for you, it's not about the weight. It's about how it makes us feel. Mm-hmm. And I love that we've been able to flip that switch in our brain.
Yeah. I mean, same with the whole 30 and finding your food freedom. Like, it does take a while. But that is definitely something to work towards, because it's so, I mean, for lack of a better word, it's so much more freeing to live your life that way, not to be tied to like a number on the scale or tied to yes, no foods lists that are totally arbitrary or anything like that. Eventually, you'll get to the point where most of the time you're choosing to eat foods because they're nutrient dense and because they make you feel good on multiple levels. And then sometimes you'll choose foods that, you know, like the goat cheese or ice cream or whatever it is, because you truly enjoy them, but not because you're not allowed to eat them ever.
Exactly.
And then you don't also feel as bad when you do eat them.
Well, and I like, too, that we're really removing any sort of numerical value from diets. Like, it's not about the scale with Whole30. It's not about counting calories. Because I think when you have a numeric value attached to something, it's really easy to add a positive or negative vibration or feeling onto that. And it can categorize really easily food, bad foods, good foods. And so, like, for me, like, that used to be the first thing I always looked at was the calories and, like, oh, wow, this is so much. And I even hate that fast food places or restaurants have that now. Mm-hmm. Because I think that, like, you can evolve past that. Like, if you're eating wholesome, good foods for you, it is so freeing to not have to, like, attach this value to the calories on it. Because in turn, then you just feel guilty. And that's not how we should be approaching any sort of long-term health goals.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, so with all of this, like, not counting and food freedom and nutrient dense, all of this goodness, you have something along these lines that is coming out very soon. You have a new cookbook coming out. So tell us a little bit about that.
I do. It's coming out June 5th. It's the Whole Smith's Good Food Cookbook. And it's actually the very first cookbook to be Whole30 endorsed.
Yeah, that is so freaking cool.
I know. I feel like I'm still, like, pinching myself, like, especially because it's coming up so soon. Because it's been just so much work. And I just, you know, to be honest, behind the scenes, it's me in my pajamas, like, cooking all day in this kitchen and, like, you know, stressing. And so now that it's ready for everybody, I'm excited. So I wanted to clarify what Whole30 endorsed is, because the entire book isn't Whole30 compliant. A little over half of the recipes are recipes that are Whole30 compliant or can be easily made into a Whole30 compliant meal. For example, like omit the goat cheese, or, you know, don't add honey into this dressing. So simple things like that. But the rest of the recipes are designed for your food freedom. So it's maybe it's minimal cheese, it's optional. There's a few paleo desserts in there. I created some mocktails that you can turn into cocktails if you're, you know, depending if you're doing a Whole30 or maybe your friends aren't. So it's designed for life beyond and like giving people almost permission too. Cause I think during the program, they feel like, oh, I can never have dairy. I can't have dairy. And then afterwards, like you can still have some dairy. It's not this like food you should always feel guilty at. And like, if you can tolerate dairy, like I'm jealous, go for it.
Exactly. I know. I always say that to people, like, you can tolerate gluten. I'm honestly jealous because I would love to have some like New York bagels and Italian pasta again, but I can't.
What are there any gluten-y things that you like actually do miss that you wish you could have in your food freedom?
Oh my God. Yes. Okay, so one of the things, and I've been trying to recreate this, but again, I suck at baking, so it hasn't worked. So my family's from New Jersey, so we're very like New Jersey, New York, Italian type thing. When I was growing up, it was a lot of like chicken parmesan and pasta with red sauce and meatballs on Sundays and whatever. But for every single person's birthday, we used to try and we succeeded in recreating New Jersey crumb buns, which is kind of like, so crumb cake is different. If you think of like the Entenmann's crumb cake, it has like, you know, 2 or 3 inches of like the spongy yellow cake and then a little bit of crumbs on top.
Like crummy on top. Yeah, like they sprinkle it.
Exactly. So the New Jersey crumb buns, if you've ever had them before, it's like half an inch of cake and then like 2 inches of straight like butter, flour, and powdered sugar crumbs. So we used to make that every single birthday for anyone in my house, so much so that I knew, like, I probably still know the recipe by heart because I was the one that made it for everyone's birthdays. So that I'm really sad that I can't eat anymore. One day I will be able to recreate it, but has not happened yet.
Have you tried the cup for cup flour yet?
No, I haven't.
Okay, they have a bunch of different types. So it's all gluten-free, but they have one just for pies or for cookies. So they kind of change it based on what, because, you know, like a lot of gluten-free flours are just, they don't work for cookies and cake, like they say it or not. But like I was able to recreate a pie crust with that, their pie one, and it was like, you couldn't even tell.
Oh my God, I'm going to cry if this actually works.
Totally. I think it's on Amazon and Target sometimes has it.
Oh my God, I'm going to look that up. And then
do it.
The other thing would be, well, this is like a combination of gluten and dairy, but my family has a lake house out in Western Maryland, and there's like a down home. It's called the Lakeside Creamery, and there I love everything graham crackers, and they had this graham cracker ice cream there when I was younger. I think they only had it the one time that I was ever there, and then they also had like a graham cracker blueberry one, and I would just die if I could recreate that. But none of the gluten-free graham crackers that I've ever tried have ever come close to the like blue box ones that I used to eat when I was a kid.
I know, right?
What about you?
Oh my gosh, like I know immediately what it is. So sour, like a freshly baked sourdough bread.
Oh yeah,
like out of the oven with butter, like with the crusty, like, oh, that is one thing, because you can't recreate that. There's no gluten-free flour that'll recreate that. And then my husband and I used to like beer, like do like the whole craft beer thing, and so there's gluten-free beers out there, but it's not the same, and you can't really taste, there's not a bunch of variety. So like just like a good old beer sometimes is just sounds really good, like on a end of the day, like a hot day, just to have a beer.
That's all I want, is just a beer. We're gonna make
just
people like
beer, man,
salivating talking about totally non-Whole30 foods on this podcast. I know, right?
Well, good for them if they can go have their crumb cake and beer and sourdough. We are not hating at all.
No, maybe we're just being really jealous.
Totally.
Well, okay, so speaking of recreating recipes and stuff, what are some of your favorite recipes from the new cookbook?
Okay, so
if you can share them.
Oh yeah, I you know what? I think I have one right here. Hold on. Okay. So, I guess there's no video, so it doesn't really matter.
Well, you just missed my mouth drop because you have your cookbook in front of you.
And it's funny because I'm sitting at my desk and I have like a stack here for reference. Okay, so I have these lasagna, zucchini lasagna roll-ups. Ooh. And so for me, like, I like keeping food as similar as we can to their traditional flavor profile, but making it easy. So like if you're making a lasagna, it's not going to be like your Italian grandma's because you don't have 4 hours to make it. But I really wanted the meat sauce in this to be as pretty authentic and taste authentic. So, but instead of noodles, I just used zucchini strips and I got a mandolin. I sliced them in lengthwise and then I'd roll it up with some of the saucy, meaty goodness.
Oh, that sounds so good. And
I used a little bit of dairy-free, like a nut-based ricotta cheese in it. And
that
rolled them up.
That's amazing.
Yeah, those are one of my favorites. And it makes a lot, so you can have leftovers and they heat up really well. But that's the thing. I really wanted this cookbook to be one that people cooked from, that you could cook your lunches and get lunch ideas from and dinner ideas and not have it be a cookbook where there's so many ingredients that it's just not realistic to make, you know, during the week or whatever. Or I was really conscious too, as I know in paleo, there's a lot of specialty ingredients, or there can be. Mm-hmm. So I wanted it to be ones that people can find at the store that they don't have to source online. You know, Trader Joe's or Costco or, you know, Whole Foods has a great assortment, but just things that were a little more accessible for people.
Yeah, that's awesome. I mean, that's the way that I love to cook too. And I honestly find that, I mean, I have a lot of great cookbooks, but I don't really cook from them that often because, you know, whether it's lunch or just during the week, like I don't have time. And it's funny because I'm a food blogger, right? I work from home. Yeah. Like if anyone should have time, like I should have time. But I don't totally have time to like make 45 minutes to an hour's worth of dinner every single night, even if I know it's going to be a great, super delicious recipe. Like ain't nobody got time for that.
No, totally. And you know what? Especially when I've already been cooking and doing work cooking, the last thing I want to do at the end of the day is cook some more. Like, no way.
Oh, my God. Yeah. That's
chicken, so apple, true. Sausages for dinner.
Exactly. Oh, my gosh. Ingredient meals for the win. That's for sure.
Right? So, yeah. So, I kept that in mind. There's some, like, there's a cauliflower rice risotto I made. Whoa. And that one's going to be a little bit more labor intensive, but, like, you can save that for a weekend or a special occasion. But, yeah, that one's pretty good too.
Yeah, that's awesome. Well, tell people where they can find the cookbook, where they can find you, and when it comes out.
Okay, so it's out June 5th, but it's available for pre-order now. Anywhere books are sold, you can go on Amazon, pre-order it. There's also a pre-order incentive. So if you pre-order the cookbook, you get, there's a lot of goodies you actually get. So first off, you get 5 recipes as a sneak peek right away so you can start cooking. And then I created a bonus recipe for grain-free breakfast cookies with my partners at Made in Nature. And even better is that they have put together a snack box, Made in Nature has. And so if you pre-order the book, they will mail you this snack box that has one of their single serve snacks in it so you can eat it right away. And a VIP coupon book, which are really awesome coupons. And one of the coupons is for a free full-size product from them.
Oh, wow.
So, yeah, I know, right? I'm like, why wouldn't – why are you, free food, people? Like, come on. So if you pre-order it, you can get all of those goodies. And, yeah, Amazon, it'll be at Target. It's going to be at Costco, Walmart.
All the places. And then where can people find you?
So I am at theholesmiths.com. You can also find me on Instagram at theholesmiths. Facebook's at theholesmiths. Everywhere's just at theholesmiths.
Perfect. Branding on point.
I know. I feel like I lucked out that like I was able to get that on every platform.
Yeah, that is really lucky. Well, thanks so much for coming on. I'm really excited for your cookbook.
Thank you so much for having me, Dana.
Thanks for listening to Real Talk with Dana. If you enjoyed the episode, please share it with your family and friends and share the love by throwing us a 5-star rating and review on iTunes, which will help spread the word and do a small part to correct all of the fitness and nutrition misinformation or bullshit that's out there, which is only causing people to become more unhealthy. Come find me anywhere at Real Food with Dana on Instagram and Facebook. Join the Real Talk with Dana Facebook group for more support and discussion on these episodes. And come hang out over on realfoodwithdana.com for the show notes and totally epic and delicious recipes.